This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. I talk to a lot of people who write historical nonfiction, aka professional historians, about New Orleans. Like my very first Tripod interview with this guy.
Hi, my name is Larry Powell.
Hi, Larry. I recently brought him back into the studio to talk about a genre he doesn't write, one that lives in murkier waters, historical fiction. I hadn't thought of it before, but it's actually pretty ballsy to write the stuff. You're basically signing yourself up for scrutiny, especially if you set your novel in New Orleans, where we love our myths as much as our history. The first writer to take on this risk was George Washington Cable.
Well, he's the first really to introduce the whole almost exoticism of Creole culture, both white and black. And he was enormously popular. He was really up there with Twain.
As in Mark Twain, who I'm sure you've heard of. But how many of you know who Cable is? There's clearly no way for me to know the answer to this, but I'm going to go ahead and assume less. But this wasn't true for 19th century readers. Some call Cable the first modern Southern writer. A native New Orleanian born in 1844, he became the source for visitors interested in the city's history. Even though this was fiction, tourists walked around with their map and their cable. So just that idea of like tourists walking around with guidebook, but it was his novel.
He became a real sensation. And it became the book you would read if you wanted to descend into this world.
Larry's talking about Cable's most famous novel, The Grandes Dames, A Story of Creole Life, which he wrote in 1880. It depicts race and class relations in the city right after the Louisiana Purchase, but it's more of an allegory about the Reconstruction era when it was written, and dynamics within the French Creole culture in the aftermath of slavery. The book focuses on various members of the Grandes Dames family who are made up of black, white, and mixed race members.
And a novel that was meant to change consciousness about race.
That's a change Cable himself made. He was born into a wealthy family of slave owners and went on to serve in the Confederate Army during the Civil War. But his experiences changed him, and he became an advocate for racial equality. This is when he started getting into trouble. White uptown Creoles got pissed.
Well, I think the thing that rubbed them wrong the most was his suggestion that Creoles were, as they say down here, had been tainted with a tar brush, that there had been a lot of interracial commerce and cohabitation, and Grandes Dames was a story about two brothers, basically, one white, one black. And I think the white Creole intellectuals were pushing back against the idea that Creoles had any kind of African blood whatsoever.
White Creoles sought to deny black family members and harden the myth that Creole just meant white.
And Cable really exposed that myth in a way they found deeply uncomfortable. And
so it's interesting. It's almost like he's documenting history while a certain group of people are trying to
mythologize it.
And they're like, hey, wait a second, you're messing with the narrative we're building here.
Right. They were trying to distance themselves from their lineage.
Many white Southerners worked to deny citizenship to men and women of color after the Civil War, and they made equal efforts to intimidate those who defended equality. 5 years after he wrote The Grandes Dames, remember, a fictional account, Cable felt so threatened by the hostility he faced in his hometown that he moved his family to Northampton, Massachusetts.
He always thought the white South had a silent majority that meant to do well, and he wanted to provide ammunition. Well, it didn't work out that way. They drove him out of town.
You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. Fast forward to the 21st century. Today, most people don't even know who George Washington Cable is, unless you're a historical fiction writer like Kent Wascom.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good to meet you.
Kent's a Gulf South native who recently published Secessia, a book set in New Orleans during the Union occupation in 1862. With that in mind, we're sitting in Palmer Park, named after Benjamin Palmer, a staunch defender of slavery and big pusher for Louisiana to join the Confederacy. When I mention the name George Washington Cable, Kent finishes my sentence.
Who was run out of town. He was the first great bridge between New Orleans and the rest of the Anglo-Celtic country. The things he was accused of, and this is where I always get fascinated with how language was used then, was also being inauthentic and of not representing the place properly.
Cable was blindsided by the outrage, but Kent expects it.
Maybe it's a sadistic impulse, but I'm more engaged when I'm angry. And because so much of our culture is about hiding the ills or hiding it behind glorification or behind marble or bronze, I enjoy dragging out the more wretched things.
Still, Cable's trajectory seems to haunt him.
I used to live in abject fear of historians standing up at readings and saying, "You're wrong, you got this wrong."
And he's not alone.
I didn't tell anyone that I wrote this book until about 6 months after it was published. And part of that was complete and utter fear of New Orleanians reading the book and hating me.
Somebody get these people a support group already. This is Elise Arden, by the way, author of the young adult sensation, The Casket Girls. We're sitting in her apartment on Esplanade Avenue, which peers into the French Quarter between Burgundy and Dauphine Streets. The Casket Girls blends historical and paranormal activity and spans all three centuries of New Orleans' life, from the penal colony days to a post-storm apocalyptic landscape. No wonder Elise has some anxiety. But it doesn't stop her from taking on dark matter either. The title of her book is a reference to the first women sent over to Louisiana before the city was even founded.
The history of the Casket Girls coming over, you know, which is kind of an adult topic of the King of France sending these young girls over to basically marry men of the penal colony.
To keep them here, right? Because they were all like, this sucks.
How are we going to make a population? Like, there's no ladies.
She weaves this piece of history with other time periods, along with urban legends that she heard growing up in the quarter.
Taking an urban legend, I kind of have to like find out every single thing about it and the point in history that it happened. And that's where I'm like calling Lee.
Lee Loomis, archivist of the Archdiocese of New Orleans and one of Elise's consultants.
And being like, so in this urban legend, X, Y, and Z happens, but I'm reading Noir Code. And according to this, I don't really know if this is possible.
You just literally dramatized historical fiction.
Yes. So how far from reality would that be?
Right.
And then we get to a scale and I'm like, okay, I can live with that.
Kent's also on board with taking liberties.
Well, not to give myself too good of company, but the Greeks learned their history from Homer.
I want to know what you think of this quote.
Okay.
A fellow writer of historical fiction said this.
Okay.
Donna Gillespie. In crankier moments, I think expecting to learn history from a historical novel is like trying to learn botany by studying impressionist paintings of trees. There's truth in those trees, it just isn't literal truth.
Wow.
So what do you think?
I absolutely agree. Fiction's job isn't the literal or the absolute. There's a responsibility there, though. You have to be true to the experience, if not to the fact.
This rings true, especially for Kent, whose characters are people that really existed in real life, which matters when people are using your books to get a sense of a time and place, as Elise also knows.
I wrote the original draft of the book online. So most of the people that were reading it were not necessarily in New Orleans. So there is a lot of people coming to the city and bringing the book or doing like a tour from the book, going around the quarter and stuff like that.
Just like old G.W. Cable. And as for her local audience?
100 people just growing up in this 12-block radius right here are going to have different, you know, perspectives and experiences and argue which one's right and wrong. So I definitely don't think there's like a defining New Orleans experience.
Yeah.
And if you hate it and it's not your New Orleans experience, that's fine. Yes.
Just don't make you live in Massachusetts afterwards.
Exactly. I want to be able to come home.
Cable never did come back home, but he never stopped writing about it either. His last work, written in 1918, is called Lovers of Louisiana, of which he always was one, just like his contemporary historical fiction writers, Elise and Kent.
Oh!
Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered. To hear this episode of Tripod again, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, write us a review. It helps other people find us. You can also go to WWNO.org where you can see a photograph of George Washington Cable. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson.
It's Ken Wascom, and I'll tripod you later.
Yes.
I love it.
Whoa!